episode of the Best Than Greenway podcast today. Carl Beston here, be joined by Andrew Bogut, who's going to come on and talk about the Boomers' campaign so far, you know, what we can learn from their games against Germany and Japan, and what that means going forward into the multiple do-or-die clashes that the Boomers face now, beginning against Slovenia with Luka Doncic tomorrow night. Also going to talk about who we kind of think the contenders at the World Cup are, to some degree, some of the pretenders as well. Also going to talk about this interesting story that came out of Marcus Spears reporting. It was all over the News Corp papers yesterday about Ben Simmons' discussions, you know, him saying that he'd like to be available for the Olympics at Paris 2024 next year. Have a chat to Bogues about that as well. And also we just have some general chat about the Kings and the NBL preseason as a whole as well, which is actually pretty interesting stuff. But before we get to all that, you know, we're a week into the World Cup now, and you kind of sit back and you think, like, what do we really know here? You know, and well, for one thing, I think I know about the World Cup, it's kind of been a complete paradox in itself, right? Like, seemingly there's just endless games with lopsided predictable results, right? And the gamblers out there, people who look at the odds and all that, as I do every day, you kind of see a variety of, you know, games with minus 15.5, with 15.5 point lines all the way out to even some games are in the 30s, right? Like, you have a look, USA versus Jordan, I think, was like a 40 point line or something. You know, and you just look at it and you go, everything's $1.20, $1.15 on the money line. You get looking at these huge lines. And you go, God, this is so predictable and boring, right? Like, it just seems a bit monotonous, especially early in the group stages. But then, and you go, well, yeah, but then France get eliminated by a shorthanded Latvia in the group of death, right? So, and to a lesser extent, I suppose I should also point out that Italy loses to the Dominican Republic. Then all of a sudden, the complexion of seemingly the most predictable final eight, which I thought was set in stone, barring maybe the whole Canada, France, Spain thing was sort of a question in that whole group of death sort of thing. But it's all completely turned on its head now, with 25% of that being gone. So is it really that predictable? Probably not. Speaking of what do we know after a week of the FIBA World Cup, what do we know about the Boomers? Do we really know? It's hard to tell, right? Like, the games against Finland and Japan, basketball minnow countries, I think we can kind of say, they provide like little to no predictive value going forward for the Boomers. You know, they're just bad teams. Then you have to consider on Sunday night the bad loss to, you know, a Wagner-less Germany. And yeah, well, that was bad. Like, there's no excuses for that. It was a really bad game. The Boomers should have won that game. And I think it actually is somewhat damaging going forward. Like, it does create some difficulties with the other side of the draw, etc. And also, you really wonder about their ability to beat good teams if they can't win in those circumstances. It's still not terminal, right? Due to the relative weakness of the crossover group that Australia finds itself in. You know, they don't have to cross over with the USA. They don't have to cross over with Canada. They don't have to cross over with Spain. They don't even have to cross over with, I don't know, Serbia. You know, they don't have these big name teams, but rather a very beatable Slovenia team. Yes, they've got Luka Doncic, but I mean, the bookies have Australia at $1.42 to win the game at about a 6-point line, right? So they clearly think Australia is going to win. And then Georgia as well, that aren't a very good team. Boomers only beat them by 5 in the practice games, but I don't think they're that great. They haven't looked that great in the pool game. They lost other practice games to countries like, you know, they lost to Latvia by a ton, like 40 points or something ridiculous. So, yeah, it's not terminal. And this is the thing about the World Cup. It comes down to a few high leverage, big moments, or big games. And while the Boomers have made life harder for themselves, having to win out now, you cannot lose another game now, right? It's still achievable. Granted, you know, I get it. It's on the hardest side of the bracket. You know, we're on the really, really difficult side of the bracket featuring Canada, yeah, potential quarterfinal against Canada or Spain, then a USA in the semifinal. I get it. It's tough, right? But I remember this quote, there's this video of Michael Irvin, this NFL commentator, and I thought it was actually, it's a lot of fun, but it's also somewhat compelling, right? And he talks about the fact that Goliath wasn't sent to David for his destruction. Goliath was sent to David for his construction, right? And maybe the Boomers come out of these games stronger. Anyway, let's take a break and we'll be right back after with the host of the Rogues Bogues podcast and former Boomer star, Andrew Bogut. Bogues, welcome to the pod, man.
Thanks, appreciate it.
No, it's good to have you on, man. And what are your general thoughts on the World Cup so far?
Pretty interesting. I mean, what I like about these tournaments is that there's always some outliers, there's always some teams that, you know, surprise. But, you know, even last night, you know, New Zealand should have theoretically beat Greece and got through, but they, you know, had a great first half and a horrible second half and ended up choking the lead. So you always see a lot of drama. You know, you see France getting bounced out in the first round. I definitely didn't see that coming. And not losing to, you know, Canada by 40. Latvia, obviously a surprise of the tournament. Really well put together and just a good team. So it's been interesting, but yeah, a few surprises along the way.
And I suppose specifically about the Boomers as well now, sort of like, no, I wouldn't say an unexpected loss to Germany. I think it was always pretty much a 50-50 game, but kind of makes life difficult now having to face Slovenia next. What was your kind of reaction to the Germany game and what happened in that one?
Yeah, I mean, I had that as a coin flip until Wagner was out. Once Wagner was scratched from that game, you know, I thought it's a pretty winnable game for us, to be honest with you. And we just didn't play that well. Look, people might look at it and say, well, we only lost by, you know, a close margin. It was a basket at the end of it or whatever it was. But I think the Boomers just... It was real clunky. I mean, the first two games, you know, Finland and Germany, I mean, Finland aren't very good. But even they gave us some problems early. We just, you know, I think the problem with the Boomers is our best defensive lineup is our, you know, probably our worst offensive lineup. And then defensive lineup is our worst offensive and vice versa, right? So it causes some issues with coaches trying to figure out the Rubik's Cube of who we put with who. And they're still searching for lineups. And the first two games for me, it was just too, you know, way too much pick and roll to death. It felt like we were playing outside of the kind of the wing and up to half court was where all of our offense ran. So I think that, you know, we made a good adjustment against Japan. Now it is against Japan, so you're going to take it with a grain of salt because they're not very good. No disrespect to them, but it looked much better. You could note it was a notable adjustment that they were trying to get. You know, some post touches. I mean, Dwight Reith had a few nice seals. They put Giddy in different positions to utilize his passing instead of just having him run off pick and rolls and get doubled or blitzed. He has to give the ball up early. They had him playing kind of off the elbows at times or even off the high post into some split games. So I think they made some adjustments in the Japan game. The question is going to be when, you know, the next round, Slovenia, even Georgia, when things get tight, are they going to revert back to pick and roll isolation basketball, which, you know, to be honest with you, isn't pretty to watch at times.
No, and that's the thing. Like, if you the pace of the Japanese game also suited the Boomers a lot more, right? Not only the talent disparity obviously helps, when you're playing against Japan relative to Germany. But also, you know, Japan play the fast-paced game that I think helps the Boomers with certain guys who are able to get out in trans, especially some of like the, I suppose, more defensively minded players that we talk about, you know, struggling a little bit in half-court offense. Like, they're more effective in a transition game, whether it's like your Thybulles, your Josh Greens, etc. You know, that helps you out a little bit more in regard to that. And also you can rack up a higher score. So the defensive end, you can kind of play a bit more fast and loose with it, right? I think the big thing to come out of the Germany game was everyone talked about what is with the pick and roll, right? Like, you know, we're so bad in the pick and roll. Schroeder tore us apart. None of our bigs can guard the pick and roll. It's not quite as simple as that though, right? I mean, Nick Kay got kind of torched, but I think it's, you know, everyone will talk about, oh, Nick Kay got torched, Nick Kay got torched, but it's kind of a bit of a lazy argument and kind of doesn't really consider the underlying issues that sit behind that as well, right, in terms of rim protection, et cetera.
Yeah, you can't blame Nick at all. No. I mean, you're asking a guy that's, you know, Nick's an all-effort guy. He's not the quickest. He's not the most athletic, but he's fundamentally sound. He's got a high basketball IQ, and he's very, very good fit with that group as a piece in the puzzle. But then you're asking him to switch 1-4 or 1-5 on a Schroeder, which next game will probably be Luka. That's a suicide mission. Like, you're putting a lot of pressure on him. And I felt like in that game, the adjustment would have been to, you know, you got to keep Green. And even Matisse, I didn't think, got enough of a stint on Schroeder that game. I would have liked to have seen him, you know, in the first half. I think Matisse did a pretty decent job at times. You know, Schroeder kind of got going when Patty was guarding him and a few other guys. But yeah, it's 1-4, 1-5, and you're going to ISO one of the best point guards in the FIBA World Cup with, you know, a fundamentally sound, average athletic big. You know, it's not going to end well. And that's what we saw, just going straight by him. And to be fair, it wasn't just Nick. He was going by Patty the same way. He was even getting by Matisse. The difference is, you know, when he gets by a Matisse or a Josh Green, that they've got a bit more length and athleticism to at least cause some problems from behind and contest from behind. Whereas, you know, someone like Patty or Nick, you're getting by them and you're kind of on the rim.
Now, this is the thing, right? Like, Nick's on an island out there, and that makes it difficult for Nick, right? Because otherwise Nick will be able to kind of choose it, you know, he can pick his poison with that if he has got rim protection behind, but he hasn't got any because just the limitations of this team, right? He hasn't got any rim protection behind, so he can't get up and in on Schroeder, because if he gets blown by, it's just an automatic layup, right? Because there's nothing sitting behind him. But then if he kind of sags off a little bit, he gets torched with the step back or just a pull up from Schroeder as well. And I think you made a sound point. Everyone kind of focused on Nick because it was Nick played a lot of minutes, right? But there's a reason why Nick played a lot of minutes. Everyone else that tried to guard him in that, you know, 1-4, 1-5 switch, whether it be Duopri, whether it be Jack White got torched as well, and, you know, he was kind of, you know, tagged, you know, heading into the tournament as this guy that him and Cooks can, you know, do that switch and we can feel more comfortable. He got torched as well. So there were really no options. And I think Nick's kind of been unfairly singled out in regards to that as well. Was there anything else in the Germany game that you sort of saw as an alarm going forward playing against Slovenia and Georgia?
Yeah, I just think our offense, I think the ball just needs to move. I think we're our most potent when we're, you know, there's going to be times in every game where you have to go ISO ball. But I just think if you steady diet isolation basketball and FIBA, you're eventually going to hit a roadblock, and it's going to end up being a 10 or 15 point loss if you dry, right? So if you can get everyone involved, especially early in games, you know, people talk about Matisse struggling offensively. Well, you know, yeah, he is. But he's also stuck in the corner the first two games, and I don't think the ball went below the wing for two odd quarters straight where he even had an open shot, right? So I feel like you have to get everyone, at least the ball through everyone's hands early in games, and that doesn't mean to shoot. It just means that they feel involved in the offense, and then all of a sudden if you do get a swing, you know, you got a wide open shot, the pressure's not as heavy, whereas in the first two games it was very, you know, Giddy was either Giddy or Patty out of a pick and roll. And then they were the creators, which, you know, they obviously will create a lot for the Boomers. But I think if you that's 90% of your offense, you're relying a lot on those two guys not having an off night. And we saw, you know, I felt like in the Germany game that Josh had a horrible first half, and he bounced back really well in that second half. I was really impressed with the way he didn't let a bad half turn into a bad game, and he was huge for us in the second half. And it was a vice versa with Paddy, right? Like Paddy was kept us in the game early on. Without his shot making in that first quarter, we're probably down 15 at quarter time, but then he wasn't great in the second half. So that's when you rely on individuals a little bit too much. It can kind of hurt you sometimes.
When we were talking yesterday, you kind of made note against Japan. We've seen some sort of difference in the offense that was run, but we've sort of seen some more runs being so heavy PNR and ISO based that we did kind of see some more split action in the third game against Japan. Which we do have kind of personnel for, right? Like we have a lot of big guards, and also Nick Kay's an excellent passer as well. What'd you think of that?
Yeah, we had to do that. I think that was the blatant adjustment was, we got to find some easy offense. Like we have to find some offense where, everyone knows Paddy's kind of the number one scoring option on this team. When he's coming off a screen, off a wide pin down screen, or even a ball screen, there's a lot of attention to him. He can use that attention to run off those things and back cut them and curl them and go and set a cross screen for Giddy or Ingles getting to the basket. We saw some of that. We saw all the attention, being on those guys. It then loosens up things to get to the basket. And I think when you can, and not only that, we threw it into the post a couple of times. I'm not saying, we need to be we're not a heavy post up team. We just don't have that post threat. But, one through five switch, Dwight Breath has a guard on him, even a smaller three or four man at times. He just ducked in from the top of the key. They threw it in there and he shot right over that smaller guy. So they're the looks we kind of need to get, those easy, cheap looks early on in games. I feel like it flattens the defense out, and then all of a sudden you have pick and roll spacing. But the first two games, teams were really up and in us on those pick and rolls, kind of daring us to make plays for each other. And I don't think we did a good job of that. So it was good to see the adjustment against Japan. But as I said, Japan's not the most talented team by any means. A win's a win in a World Cup, but this next round, when the going gets tough against Slovenia or Georgia, my question mark is, do we go individual again, or do we continue to find easy baskets for each other?
And one of the other significant changes we saw in the Japan game was the lineup changes. There was a significant shortening of the rotation relative to previous games. What do you think of that? And do you think that is a permanent fixture going forward, or do you think that was a one-off sort of adjustment for Japan?
I think Gorge is searching. There's no doubt about it. I mean, they still don't have a lineup that's the lineup. So they don't have a lineup that I've, this is our lineup when the going gets tough. Like last 3 minutes, this is our lineup. That's a good thing and a bad thing. The bad thing is they don't have that lineup. They haven't figured it out yet. The good thing is Gorge is still searching for it. Is that ideal in the second round of going into the second round of a FIBA World Cup? Probably not, but that's the problem you have with the pro and the con of a talented team, right? Like you're a very deep, talented team, but then, you got to find minutes for other guys. Who do you give a chance to? I'm surprised, Chris hasn't played more than he has just in spurts when their offense has been real clunky, just getting him out there as another shooter. Worst case, you don't even put him on the ball. You just have him in the corner. No one's leaving him, right? It just creates a bit more space. Joey hasn't really been a huge creator for this team like he has in the past. He's been more off the ball. So they're still figuring things out, but it's tough. Those minor adjustments can win you a semi-final and get you to the final, and that's what I think the Boomers are searching for right now.
Yeah, because this is the problem at a World Cup too, right? There's a lot of bad teams. Like, generally there's very strong qualifiers out of Europe, and of course, like USA and Canada are obviously very strong as well. But then, some of the qualifiers out of Asia, some of the qualifiers out of the Americas, some of the qualifiers out of Africa, you're not getting the best indicator of what's best going forward, if that makes sense. And we sort of had that with all due respect to the teams that were played, the Boomers played against in Melbourne with the in terms of the practice games. It's not exactly, and practice games are practice games, right? It's hard to kind of work out these lineups, at camp and in these sort of meaningless practice games. So it's always going to be a work in progress. It's just, it's a bit of a worry when you have that first loss, the loss to Germany does kind of create a do or die situation where you got to go, well, we got to find it now because another loss, it's over. How do you see, the Slovenia game kind of going forward? How can they limit Doncic? What do you think the plan is going forward against Slovenia?
Look, I think if there's anyone we match up well with, it's Slovenia, in my opinion. I just think that when you look, it is a Luka Doncic, but I think the easiest teams to scout for are teams like this that just have one guy that you got to scheme around. And I think we have the horses in Matisse and Green to be able to guard someone like that. Or at least, you're not going to hold Luka to 15 points, but, if he has 25 or 30, you want that to be at a bad clip, kind of like it was in the bronze medal game. And just make sure it's not a 10 or 15 assist game, right? So you'd rather him go, 11 for 30 something with three or four assists, you're going to win that game. So I like our chances against them. But the flip side of that is, we beat Slovenia in that bronze medal game. We played really well. I think Slovenia didn't really show up. They just looked like they were kind of like us in 2019 when we lost to Spain. We showed up against France and played okay in the first half and then just lost it. And it was kind of like, whatever, we're still reeling about the, not making the gold medal game. I think Slovenia went through that in the Olympics.
Mm.
So I think there's going to be a bit of a revenge factor about, Luka's going to obviously had read that he was shut down by the Boomers and they played really well and they won the bronze and all that kind of stuff. So there'll be that factor as well. So I think it'll be a really, really good game looking at those dynamics, but I don't hate our chances. I think we definitely have a chance. I think this is a game though that I think we will miss someone like Jock. I think there's been certain games where we've missed him a little bit. I think the Germany one was another one, but I think that's where our bigs, I think, and they're not super deep in the big spots. Yeah. But that's where we can do some damage, I think.
No, that's and in terms of because PNR was made, everyone made kind of such a big deal out of PNR defense against Germany a couple of days ago. What do you think the approach is with Doncic? Do you think it's guys trying to fight over and going with a hard sting as well, or how do you think they go about guarding Doncic? And what is probably we talk about the Boomers being heavy pick and roll. There's not a more heavy pick and roll team in the competition than Slovenia. So how do you guard that, do you think?
Yeah, I think the same way they did in the bronze medal game. I think you just got to work Doncic and I think you got to meet him at three-quarter court / half court if you're Matisse or Green and try to, turn him a couple of times, pick him up full court, make him work just to get the ball up. So those easy, make sure he's not walking it up and getting to sets. I think they just want to make him work and try to hopefully wear him down over the course of the game. Look, I think if you go to the steady diet of one through four or five switches, it's a suicide mission. So I don't think they're going to do that. I think they'll, when you're blitzing with Matisse and Xavier or Duop or even Nick Kay to an extent, that's a lot of length, especially from the Matisse point of view. So for Doncic to get that ball out quickly and easily out of a double team from the pick and roll is going to be key. And if you've got length on him, all you need is that pass to be a little bit of a lollipop pass, right? So if you can just buy an extra half a second for your rotation, you're in good stead. If Luka splits that double or actually gets a nice chest pass out, then you're in trouble. So I think that's where we have the advantage with the length. The key is going to be Green and Matisse staying out of foul trouble because I think beyond those two guys, you don't really have anyone in our guard lineup. I would hate to see Patty on him. They'll just drop him straight down in that high post or that post off the block and just put Patty in the basket. And Joey's obviously, not the quickest, most athletic guy defensively. So you don't want to put those two guys. And then it begs the question that if Matisse and Green are in foul trouble, does Dyson Daniels get a look in, which I doubt because he hasn't played played a valuable minute yet for the tournament. So there's a lot of questions there. But I think, like I said, we have the ponies, we have the horses and length to guard him. So I'd anticipate us trying to get the ball out of his hands. And look, if we lose that game, devil's advocate, I'd rather lose it with, one of their role players hitting five or six threes and losing it that way than Luka Doncic having 40 on a good clip with eight assists. Then you kind of like, well, we should have adjusted for that better because it's Luka Doncic.
Yeah, exactly. And you just kind of got to get the ball out of his hands and then rely on rotations on the 4v3 on the back end of it and just hope that you can, you pick the right guys to stay off of on the three-point line. They do have some shooters like Propelic, etc. But if they're beating you, you tip your hat and you move on, right? Like you'd rather lose that way than lose via Luka. So I kind of agree with you. I haven't been that impressed with Slovenia, to be honest. I do think it is very Luka-centric, and don't get me wrong, that's a great thing to have. But you just, with the losses of Čančar, etc., and before the tournament started, there's just a bit of a lack of depth in those secondary guys. So I largely agree with you. But do you think Germany could potentially lose to Slovenia, though?
I think it'd be a good matchup. I think Germany's definitely got a chance, especially. Have you heard what to do with Wagner? I haven't heard.
It's quiet, right? And he's walking around in a moon boot, so that kind of doesn't indicate good things, right? Like, generally when you're in the boot, it's a bit of a problem, correct?
Exactly, yeah. If he's in a boot, he's probably out, hoping he can come back in the next round probably, yeah. or the round after. But I think it'll be a good game. I think that Germany also have some guards that they can throw. I think the issue for Germany is I think their best defenders, their best offensive player on the wing, Intruder, I think he's the best on both. So then you're asking him to, still have high usage offensively, and then having a guard, Luka. You probably don't start Intruder on Luka because you don't want him in foul trouble or worn out. So there's going to be a bit of a chess game there as well, which I'm looking forward to seeing. But I think when the going gets tough in that game, you're going to see Intruder on Luka a lot. Just trying to pressure him and get up in him and just be that annoying antagonizing guard that he is, but he's also going to have a lot of pressure on him to score. So I'm looking forward to that game. I think it'd be a good one.
Yeah. Do you think it matters whether Australia plays Canada or Spain? Because, the results of this group, say Australia does get through, they beat Slovenia and then beat Georgia, then it might come down to points differential or something. But, I do think, there's going to be, we'll see who they play, but in the next round. Do you think it really matters though between whether it's Canada or Spain?
It's a coin flip. It depends. Pick your poison. Do you want to get grinded to death against a Spain, who really execute well, or do you want do you guard a rough and tough Canada who seems like they've got a great mix of defense and offense and length? The one knock for Canada is they've never really been there. Never been deep, so the inexperience might get to them. But on the flip side is this team's never been together for Canada, so they don't really care. Like, this is our first tournament together. We're good. Let's go. So I don't know. I have Canada as a second favourites after the US just because I think they're very, very well balanced for FIBA. SGA has just been phenomenal. I mean, with what he's doing in FIBA, is just mind-boggling the way he's playing, and whenever they need a basket, he's just so good in that mid-range and getting to the paint, and then they've got shooters all around him. They've got great defense in Brooks and a few other guys that they can mix around. Powell's a good role player for him. They've got Olenek on the three, so I would prefer to avoid, I know Spain's our bogey team and whatever, but I'd prefer to avoid Canada at all costs, but it looks like it's going to be Canada most likely if we get through in that second spot. But our equation's simple. Like, we're going to be Slovenia to get through.
Yeah, exactly. And now Canada, it is pick your poison, right? It's whether you take on the talent and the length and the athleticism of Canada or you take on the system of Spain. I've actually been shocked by Spain, to be honest. Coming into the tournament, I just thought they were facing probably too much adversity, losing Rubio just before the tournament, starting a 19-year-old at point guard and just coming, being thrown into the fire. And I watched them the other night, and granted it's not against anything spectacular as against Brazil, who I know beat Australia, etc., but that was a practice game, and they just, the ball just flies around with Spain. It was quite something to see. But you've got the USA still as favorites over Canada. Some are talking Canada up, right?
I mean, you always have the US as whether it's a slight favorite or whatever. I mean, it's the US, right? So everyone, I feel like they're always the team to beat in these competitions, no matter how new or second tier star their roster is. They're still the best athletes in the world. Mm. So I still have them as faves. I have Canada as, Canada theoretically could be in the same boat as the US when you're talking about talent and depth that, they haven't been there before. They could fall out. So have them in there. I guess the third, who do you have in the third? That's the interesting one.
That was the question I was going to ask you next, whether there's any other surprise teams that you sort of think can win. And I would have said Germany with Wagner, right? But, I don't think he's coming back, to put it bluntly.
With Wagner, I'd definitely have them as three. I think without him, I think it opens up a lot. Just because, it's so much more of a scoring load on Intruder. So there's that side of things. I mean, I don't know. There's been Dominican Republic for me have been a bit of a surprise.
Yeah.
I mean, they do have Towns, but they've played really well for the most part and kind of held their own. Obviously surprising to see Italy knocked out of there. Lithuania, you always feel like they're in the game, right?
Yep.
Like it's always a team that's, you know, not going to shoot themselves in the foot. They're always going to kind of execute. So who else do we have?
Serbia.
Serbia is always the same conversation. Mm. Is probably an even better version of Lithuania as far as organization and structure. Latvia's been okay, but I don't see them getting out of
that. They're down three starters, man. You can't win when you're down three starters to injury and probably your three best players. Like, you can't.
Exactly. Win. Exactly right. I mean, I was kind of disappointed that South Sudan didn't make it, to be honest. I would have loved it. I think they should have made the second round.
Yeah.
They choked that game versus Puerto Rico, man.
Yeah.
They definitely should have won that game, and they end up not getting through. But they were looking all right, but I just wish they would have got through because it would have been you see what just one win did for them, and they were pumped about that one win. But I think they were really unlucky to go through. Not that they would have done any damage in the next round, but for them to make the 16 would have been a sensational story. But other than that, I think it's all for the most part pretty on par. I mean, the only surprise you probably have is Dominican Republic getting through
and France missing out.
Sorry, Italy are through. My bad.
Yeah. Italy are through, but it's. They have to beat Serbia and Puerto Rico now to get in, and then it becomes a head-to-head thing with Dominican.
Do you like the way the World Cup's done this? That your wins and losses carry on.
It is what it is, right? Like, I think it becomes. I'd rather it go into a larger knockout stage, maybe, or make the groups bigger to begin with. It seems a bit, It is what it is, right?
The reason why they've done it is it stops tanking, you know.
Which is good because everyone has to play the whole time.
Exactly. So if you're 2-0, for instance, for people listening, if you're 2-0 in your pool and your third game's against Japan like us, and let's just say we're 2-0 and we don't need that win because mathematically we can't go lower than first, it stops that, and it also stops teams purposely trying to fall down a second to get a better crossover. Yeah. So it completely rules out any of the shenanigans generally that go on. You can still pull a little bit of it off if you really wanted to, but generally you're like, it's too much of a risk to carry a loss into the second round. So I like it for that fact, but I still think at times it's a little bit janky.
Yeah, I do. That is a great point. And also, like, say, for example, last round with Canada and France and that group, like, say, for example, Canada, say France beat Latvia, right? Then Canada could go out there and drop the third game, and have Latvia get through against France. You can kind of mess around with things a little bit to eliminate teams and stuff like that. And I agree with you. It's good, but it just creates some weird shit. Like, it's kind of tough now because Italy go through, but like they have to win both games, then kind of rely on point spreads and all that kind of stuff, which you don't.
Yep.
It's like, good luck, but you never know. Like, I think Serbia could lose to Italy, right? Like, it can happen. I'd have Serbia as favourites, but it can happen.
It could happen. My thing with Serbia is I think they'll just out-execute pretty much all the teams in that pool. The Dominican Republic, obviously, are very talented towns, but I just think they're just super well coached, and I just don't see anyone threatening them in that group. I think that's probably the easiest.
Yeah,
I would say the easiest group in that second round by far. I think Serbia's basically got a pretty sweet ride to the quarters. When you look at the other groups that are much, much deeper, USA, Lithuania, Montenegro, Greece is probably the second easiest.
And the USA will get the Dominican Republic in a quarterfinal. Amazing how that worked out, right?
Yeah. But I think our group and Group L are the two toughest groups, Slovenia, Germany, Australia, Georgia, and then Canada, Spain, Brazil, Latvia. I think that one's tough. I mean, it's a shame to see Neto go down for Brazil because I thought they were playing really well with him. He was having a great tournament, and obviously I think he did his ACL or something like that.
Ruptured his patella, I think.
Patella, yeah, so he's going to be out for a while. So that sucks. I think Brazil finished last.
Mm.
They ended up finishing last in that pool, in my opinion. But, it's been good. yeah, hopefully we can get a good draw and get through.
That's the thing. So that, you know, you look at it now and, you know, it would be ideal to finish first, right? Because then you go into that top half of the draw where you're sitting there with, you know, who's that going to, it's be Serbia and Lithuania as the other quarter. And so you potentially only have to go through Serbia or Lithuania to get to a final. Yeah. So whoever gets that first spot coming out of, you know, Australia, Slovenia and Germany is going to be benefited massively. So you'd have to kind of think that, you know, if that's the case, then probably, and you're probably going to play Spain, right? Because Canada probably clears house as well. So like that, it's not a bad situation to go Germany and Spain. And then you, the winner of that, you kind of play, probably going to play Serbia. I tend to agree with you. I think Lithuania are very good, but again, just down some bodies and not necessarily Sabonis either. It's more like perimeter wing scoring. They've kind of lost some guys, which makes it difficult around, because you can just pack the paint against Valanciunas as big as he's been in international tournaments lately. I just think it kind of makes it hard, right?
So. Yeah, I think Canada will have a tough one against Spain. I think that, you know, they haven't really had a grindy FIBA game. They had it against Latvia, and I think they got lucky in that game to an extent with foul trouble, and
yeah,
they made some big shots, and the score definitely wasn't reflective of how close that game was.
Mm.
But Spain's a better version of Latvia as far as execution and fundamentals of FIBA basketball. So I'm interested. I want to see Canada in a tight FIBA game, and to their credit, they've been so good they haven't really had any tight games. So they've blown out most of the teams they've played. I don't think they've felt that tight FIBA pressure game yet, and I want to see them. I think Spain could be enough to maybe give them a shock defeat now, and then really kind of wake Canada up to an extent, and then get them on their right trajectory. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Spain at least push Canada, if not beat them. But yeah, it's just a concern for me that they haven't. Whenever you're in tournaments and you have 20, 30 point wins for your first couple of games, it can be deceiving.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden you come up against a team that's been there before, that knows what it's all about, a Serbia or a Spain, one of these teams, and then you're like, oh yeah, this is the tight FIBA basketball we're talking about. So I'm interested to see that game as well.
And we've seen that in previously in like 2019 with the USA, you know, cruising along, then all of a sudden you get a veteran France group and then you lose by double digit, right? Like it's
exactly.
I think the Spain Latvia parallel is good. Yeah, and Spain have exactly what Latvia don't have that hurt them against Canada as well, which is depth, because, you know, Smits and that got in foul trouble, and then they had no bigs and they just got crushed, and then they got killed on the O boards. Spain can rebound the ball with Hernan Gomez and then also Garuba as well as supporting guys around that as well to help on the glass. Like, they won't have any problems on the O boards. I don't think. They're a more athletic team than Latvia, and they've also got that depth as well. So
yeah, exactly.
And before I let you go as well, so you're thinking USA, then Canada, clear two favourites for you?
Yeah, I wouldn't say clear. I don't think USA are clear favourites. I just have them as my – if I had to pick a one and a two, I'd have those two, and I think USA is a slight edge just because it's the USA. And then, yeah, three is the hard one. Like, I don't know who I'd put in three. I'd have Germany if they're fully healthy. I'd probably have Germany in there, but I'd probably have to go with – probably Spain and Serbia, probably 3-4.
So you put Serbia ahead of the Boomers?
At the moment, I would, just because I think when you look at the pools.
Yeah, it's easier to get through, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking on. I'm looking at numbers clearly on I think Serbia's got a better chance of getting out of their pool unscathed than Australia do out of theirs.
Yeah, 100%. And once you're in, you're in, right? If you just keep advancing.
Exactly, you're top eight and then anything can happen. And then, you know, obviously they can cross over to a bad matchup, but yeah, I think it, you know, the most likely, if Serbia go one, they probably get one of Lithuania, Montenegro, or Greece, right?
Yeah.
So I like that matchup for them as well.
Yeah, they'll get Lithuania, I think, like in that quarter. I think they will too. It'll be close, like it'll be an ugly, grinded out, tough game, but I think they will win. I watched Serbia last night. They looked very well drilled, and they just, like, they're not flashy at all, but they can hit the three ball, and they've got a lot of presence inside the paint
and
as well.
The ball as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what I'm basing it on, because I think, you know, their track to the top four is much easier than our track to the top four. If they, you know, obviously if they bomb, that's the thing. I think their pool Serbia's pool right now gives them a good trajectory to finish one quite easily. Now, if they happen to bomb a game in that and then get the USA in the crossover, different story. But basing it on looking at their pool, I just don't see anyone.
I don't see them losing a game in that pool.
Exactly. So they're not really threatened in that pool. Now, if they were in our pool or even Group L, then I don't know if you see them in the quarters, maybe, but they've definitely got the easier side of the bracket.
And what's funny is that team, like the tournament has kind of been, hurt a little bit by some of the big stars that are out. Like if Jokic was playing for Serbia, then we're probably discussing them as the next best team, if not the best team in the tournament, to be honest. He's such a presence in FIBA basketball, or global basketball, really. If like Serbia would well and truly be contenders right up there with Canada and the USA. Same, Greece probably don't struggle and, probably still find a way to get through with Giannis. It's funny how this has all happened, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a lot of guys out. I mean, Porzingis, the same thing. Yeah. So you never want to see injuries. There's a lot of guys out, but you always want to try to see your best out there and see how it goes. But that's been the thing generally with the FIBA tournaments. At least the World Cup is there's always got fellows that miss that tournament. I missed a fair few of them as well myself with injuries and stuff like that. But I was always, if the Olympics are I'm 100% in, FIBA was more like an 80, right? The World Cup was more an 80. So if you had some niggles, you were kind of like, I should probably look after the niggles so I can make sure I'm right for the Olympics the following year or the year after. So that still continues to be the case, I think.
On that topic, All the News Corp stories again yesterday about, I think it's Mark Spears is reporting out of the US that Ben Simmons will make himself available for the Olympics next year. You're buying it. You think it happens or not?
I think he's got more important things to think about, to be quite honest with you. I think he's in a career year. I know he's got his contract and whatnot, but I think, his years to get his feet back on the floor and try to find some form and confidence. I think that's more important rather than talking about, 14 months down the track or 12 months down the track. But as far as the decision goes, I've said this for the last 6 years and no one's listened to me. I'll believe it when I see it. I mean, there's old adage of once bitten, twice shy. We're on about the fifth bite, man, with the national team. And that's no disrespect to Ben. It's factual. Like we love, the Boomers would love Ben to play. We almost had him playing in 2019 during that whole debacle, which was very poorly handled. And he didn't do himself any favors with the group at that time. And that all went astray. But, obviously, he will have issues with FIBA ball at times with the shooting, but he's still a world-class athlete and world-class basketball player that you'd love to have with the Boomers. So selfishly, you want him to play, but on the other side of things, is he going to commit to what it is to be in the national team? That might mean your numbers go down. All of a sudden, are you putting the ball in Giddy's hands or Simmons' hands? There's going to be that push-pull issue. And then obviously Patty as well in that mix, who's going to be the high usage guy. You can't have three, right? So it does cause a lot of problems that could somewhat affect, the balance of what the Boomers are about. Can you bench him in a game? Will he crack the shits? If he's having a bad game, can the coach, whoever it is, say, we're going with Gideon Patty now, or we're going with Gideon Joey, or whoever it is, like, is that going to cause me a problem now for the next game? Like, that's all the questions you have, and FIBA's unique in its own ways because sometimes you get to take a seat for someone playing better. I mean, I was, I remember 2019 for myself, there were games where I played really well and played the bulk of the minutes at the center spot off the bench. And then there was the France game where Baines hit six threes. And I told Gorge, like, hey, like, leave him in there. Like, Lamanis. I said, let him roll. Give him a couple extra minutes. I know it's my time to go in for him, but man, he just pinged three threes in a row. And I was happy to give up minutes. And that's what happens in these tournaments is sometimes you're 25 that you play, you might turn into 14 because someone's hot. Can Ben buy into that and be happy with that? Yeah, I don't know. That's the question.
Because 2019 was a perfect example of that, right? Like you and Baines, and then also Landell and Kay too. Like no one was expecting Nick Kay to kind of have the tournament he had, and then he took away some of Landell's minutes. And you know what? You just do what you have to do to win, right? So I think that was probably a good example of a team that kind of did that.
Yeah, you have to do it, especially in FIBA. Like, that's why there's games where sometimes go back to Chris CG43. Like, I'm surprised he hasn't been thrown in there because sometimes there's games where things are clunky and you just throw in a you know, Nick Kay wasn't even picked to make the team in 19, yep. right? And then, you know, he comes in and he not only doesn't make the team, he was starting towards the end of the tournament, right? So or playing huge minutes, finishing games in vital games for us. So sometimes you just got to throw in guys and different lineups and try different things because things get clunky in FIBA and the court's smaller and teams scout much better and all that kind of stuff. And the refereeing's a lot more physical. So I think at times you got to try, roll the dice on some lineups.
Before I let you get out of here, mate, how's the Kings preseason going? I know you guys got a practice game with New Zealand coming up. How's it all looking?
Yeah, really good. Really good. Obviously, it's the honeymoon for every NBL team right now. Every NBL team's like, yeah, we look good. We're going, you know, we're gonna win it this year. And I mean, most teams are saying that, at least in their locker room. We truly believe that. We have a really good, well balanced roster. A lot of different weapons, a lot of different lineups we can go to. Obviously, the thing for us is another new head coach, so a new system. So that's kind of our challenge right now, is making sure that, you know, we have not only our guys fitting into coach, but coach fitting in with the city and the system and making sure he's happy, his family's happy, and so far so good. The guys have had glowing reports about mood and the way he's coached and gone about things, and his passion and energy on a daily basis. Really, really good coach. I'm in Sydney right now and was at their session yesterday, very well structured, everything's going well. And then obviously we play New Zealand tomorrow, which I don't know how that's going to go because a lot of their guys aren't there. And whenever you play kind of fringe NBL guys / NBL 1 / New Zealand NBL, like those guys usually have a lot to prove in preseason. So I don't love these kind of games just from an injury point of view.
But yeah.
My whole goal for this game is just to get out without any injuries, make sure we're healthy and fresh and just get a bit of a run out. I guess it's always good to beat up someone else rather than yourself. At training, but yeah, it'll be good to see. But yeah, we're just balanced, man. I mean, DJ Hogue as well, he's been shooting the lights out of practice. Bolden's starting to find his legs as well after not playing basketball for a while. And then obviously our bench group remains the same. A lot of different lineups. Tui's been sensational as well. I mean, he's got a chance to be one of our best in the next 2, 3, 4 years. He's definitely a future boomer. That's another question with the boomers. Put him in that lineup. Where does he fit in the future? Because he's going to be there eventually. So we're real happy with the way it's going. And we have a lot of different lineups you're going to see this season with a lot. And Mood is a coach that's not afraid to put out some really, really different types of lineups and try some different things with the way he coaches. So we're excited for the season.
Yeah, and and that's the thing too, like you're kind of seeing that a lot across the NBA, you guys. I mean, you guys have Tui at Brisbane, they got Rocco as well, which you've had a bit to do with as well. It's like you got these future boomers in waiting, which is pretty exciting for the NBL this year, right?
Yeah, very exciting. And just keeping talent at home. You know, we got lucky with Tui, obviously the Gonzaga kind of shit the bed with that and he fell right to us because I believe they over-recruited him to an extent and calls us and says, you know, I know we had conversations, I didn't want to come to the NBL, but now I do. We're like, great, done, easiest deal we've ever done, and that all worked out well. And then there's a lot of young talent in the NBL, so just with the NBL season, outside of talking about us, it's kind of an open one right now. I don't think there's a clear top four this season. I think it's very, very, you know, we'd like to see ourselves, putting us aside as the Sydney Kings, we think we'll be in the top four. But, I mean, who else do you have in there? I mean, you got Perth, obviously, that are stacked again and going after it with Pinder and whatnot and putting some more talent around Cotton. Yep. But beyond that, it's like question marks around United, other health and Huck Porty and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Brisbane, I think, is retooled pretty well. I'm really interested to see how Baines goes with the full off season of rehab and strength and conditioning and getting a bit of his bounce and athleticism back, which I think we'll see a little bit. I think he's got about another, probably having a really good year, I think, just having that off season to get away from it and get his body right. You know, he basically limped into the last NBL off season after not playing basketball for so long. So I think they'll be better. Question mark there is obviously the head coach and the experience from that point of view. Can he get that team to fire from the start? Cairns, I think, young, athletic, brash will be up in the mix. New Zealand, can they bounce back from last season? I think that their heart and soul of their team with those imports is gone. Can they reestablish that? I don't know. Illawarra is the other one I think that's going to be better. I think Illawarra is going to be better. I do. I think they. I don't know if they win a championship, but I think they're going to be much better than they were last season. They had a horror run with injuries, and obviously a new head coach and all that kind of stuff. So I think they're let the dust settle now, and I think they'll be much more competitive. Southeast Melbourne's always a question mark. Mm. Like, where are they at? What are they doing? How are they going to go about it? New head coach, all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of, you know, Adelaide as well.
Tasmania. Tasmania's kind of shown some stability relative to other teams as well, which they, you know, they could potentially find their way in the top four again, you know.
Like, yeah, exactly. You can never count them out. And then Adelaide, you know, yep, you've got CJ basically saying his next star is a starting point guard. So you scratch your head and say, well, you know, your marquee guy in McCarron, what are you doing with him then?
Yeah,
you know,
correct.
You're starting him as a shooting guard, it's probably not going to go down too well. So
plus you recruit Kadee as well, another guy who requires minutes as well. It's just,
yeah, backup guy though, but when, yeah, you, when you've paid McCarron the kind of money you have as your yeah, marquee guy, and then you're starting your next star, which isn't, you know, this is a point guard heavy league that you need experience in that spot.
Plus an import in the backcourt as well.
Exactly. So I'm interested to see how they go. Yeah. But yeah, I just don't think it's clear cut, and that's exciting. It's real exciting.
No, exactly. And so Rogues Bogues podcast, how can everyone find it, and how's it all going?
Yeah, all good, all good. We're ramping up. I've been talking about a studio for a while, but yeah, finished the studio. We'll hopefully get to videos in the next month or two, and
awesome, and
get that firing up a little bit. It's all major forums have Rogue Bogues, so you can find it everywhere. You know, we did a FIBA chat with Kane Pittman the other day, yep, and had Jock on a couple of weeks ago. So yeah, we'll ramp it back up once the NBA season rolls on here in you know, late September, early October. We'll start getting some basketball episodes out again. But yeah, doing well. A lot of listeners continue to go up, so we appreciate everyone's support. And anyone listening to this, you can go in and have a listen to some basketball stuff on there.
Yep, too easy. Well, thank you for coming on, my brother. It's always a pleasure. Very much appreciated, and hopefully the Boomers can get through, right?
No worries, man. Thanks. Good luck, Boomers.
Thanks to Bogues, and thanks to you for listening to the Best in the Greenway podcast. You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at Carl Beston. You can also find the podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and pretty much every major podcasting outlet. Also, make sure you subscribe. And if you have a spare moment or two, just, yeah, leave us a possibly 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. The pod will be back next week. I'm just trying to work out the logistics of the best day to record, in terms of aligning it with where the World Cup finals are at, so we can give you the best preview possible. But yeah, just keep your eyes on the feed and it'll be there. Much love, everyone. Enjoy the games, and I look forward to speaking to you all next week.